We're ready to proceed with our next appeal. This is Stuart Smith versus the United States. Virgil Adams is here for Appellant Smith, and Jennifer Utrecht is here for the United States. And Mr. Adams, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Virgil Adams, and I represent the appellant in this case, Stuart Smith. This is a case involving the district court's erroneous dismissal of Mr. Smith's case for lack of subject matter jurisdiction on the basis that this case involves a determination of veterans' benefits and governed by the Veterans Judicial Review Act rather than claims for medical negligence governed by the Federal Tort Claims Act. The facts, however, show otherwise. The facts clearly show that the negligence of the VA doctors and nurses and other medical personnel in failing to timely treat Stuart Smith in the face of his concerning symptoms and subsequent diagnosis of tongue and throat cancer show a failure to adhere to the applicable standard of care as described by appellant's experts and clearly shows a claim for medical negligence under the Federal Tort Claims Act. The facts are horrible.
Counsel?
Yes, Your Honor.
I agree with you. The facts are horrible. Here's my sort of concern or issue with this case. We have the VJRA. We have other circuits that have construed the delay in scheduling as covered by the VJRA, which would deprive us of jurisdiction. It seems to me that even assuming that that's true, at some point, if the delay becomes so great, it can cross over into being malpractice. In other words, let's say, just to take an extreme example, that that it takes the VA, which by the way is where your client has to go, of course, 5 years to schedule the follow-up appointment once his physician identifies the probability that cancer exists. And it takes them 5 years to schedule the follow-up appointment with the ENT. Let's just assume that in 5 years, there's not really a debate, that crosses into the realm of medical malpractice. So my question for you is, number one, with respect to the other end of the spectrum, that is these other courts outside of our circuit that have held that delays, the mere delays in scheduling are covered by the VJRA because they are in connection with benefits. Where do we draw the line and what would be the standards we use to do that, assuming that there's a point where at one end we're covered by the VJRA and at some other end it crosses over into malpractice?
Thank you, Your Honor. I think where you draw the line is, first of all, whether or not this is a case, it is a case that involves whether or not the veteran is entitled to certain benefits. That is not in this case. It is not a question about whether or not Mr. Smith was eligible for the treatment. It's a question of whether or not he timely got the treatment. We have to keep in mind that the VA is a hospital, just like any other private or public hospital in this country, and it has to adhere to the same standard of care. In this case, this was about a delay in treating a deadly disease. Mr. Smith did not apply for any benefits. If the court would look at the other cases that have focused in on delays, those have been cases where the veteran applied for a specific benefit and was either denied or there was an extremely long delay. Mr. Smith did not apply for anything. Mr. Smith sought treatment from the VA. And I think it's also important to note that the only treatment Stuart Smith got was treatment and care that was ordered by either his VA doctor, Dr. Papalo, or the specialist at the very VA hospital sent him to. So he did not apply for any benefits. This is not a benefits case.
Mr. Adams, what did the doctors do wrong? This isn't a medical malpractice case, is it? I don't see in your complaint that you allege that the doctors did anything wrong. It was the administrators at the Veterans Administration who delayed treatment ordered by the doctors. Am I incorrect about that?
Respectfully, Your Honor, you are. First of all, the court has to remember that this is a factual attack on subject matter jurisdiction, not a facial attack.
But what did the doctors do wrong?
Well, in this process, if the court would look at the record, His doctor ordered a CT scan of his neck and throat, and it came back suspicious for malignancy. And it had already spread into three lymph nodes in his neck. The nun, and she ordered a non-VA care specialist because the government, the VA did not provide this care, didn't treat cancer patients. In order to get that consult approved, it had to be reviewed by a nurse, Nurse Equime. She reviewed it from a clinical standpoint, and she had to authorize the treatment. Not only did she authorize the treatment, but the doctor, Dr. Harrington, was the non-VA medical doctor who gave another level of review in that same department with Nurse Equime. So here you've got a nurse, and here you've got a doctor that signed off on an authorization for the ENT specialist to do two things, to evaluate Mr. Smith, and then to return a recommended plan of treatment.
If this is a medical malpractice case and the case went to trial, then you would have to have a doctor testify as an expert that the doctors in this case, Cupola, Duke, and Cole, departed from the standard of care expected by doctors in providing treatment. Is that?
Yes, we would have to have an expert to give testimony. And Your Honor, that's why I get back to the point that this is a factual attack.
I guess the problem is when I read your complaint, the way it's crafted is that it's not that the doctors did anything wrong. It's just the people who work at the Veterans Administration who had to follow through with the orders of the doctors, they delayed treatment that was ordered by the doctors. And if that's true, then it seems like the Federal Tort Claims Act is not the proper avenue. The Veterans Judicial Review Act is the proper.
Your Honor, but here's the point the court is missing and that the district court missed. In a factual attack on subject matter jurisdiction, you don't just look at the complaint. You have to look at the evidence. In addition to our complaint, we attached an affidavit from an expert, from two experts, from a nurse and from an otolaryngologist who testified that the care and the lack of treatment that Mr. Smith got fell below the standard of care. Dr. Ferris was that expert. He also testified and set forth in his deposition several instances of medical negligence in the delay and treatment of Mr. Smith. He talked about the delay in getting him the appropriate test, the delay in not treating, getting his surgery authorized. And he also testified and set forth under sworn testimony that the delay was the cause of the tumor not being resectable because it was resectable in January of 2013.
Castle.
Yes.
Castle, to put a finer point on it, is it your position that someone other than the doctors, that is the hospital as an entity, could have committed malpractice? Or is it your point that the doctors here committed malpractice? And if you're, I mean, could the nurse have committed malpractice? Is it your position? Who is it specifically who you're saying committed malpractice, to address Judge Wilson's, as I understand it?
Yes, and as our expert, Dr. Ferris, indicated, the nurse who was in charge of authorizing this care, that would be Nurse Equime. Keep in mind, too, that part of her job was to monitor the care of the veterans. And according to another VA witness, Ms. Edmondson, the VA, the Dublin Hospital, put out a daily status report of every patient so that the patients could be monitored and they could, the nurses could see where they were on the schedule. And nurses routinely looked at that twice a day. Nurse Equime, Dr. Harrington, who also was responsible for authorizing and timely authorizing the treatment. Those two were guilty of medical negligence, as well as Dr. Ferris indicated that anyone that was in the line of providing care for Mr. Smith fell below the standard of care. The radiologist, not giving him the timely PET scans, not giving him the timely CT scans with contrast that would be necessary for surgery. All of these persons who were in charge of Mr. Smith's care, they failed to adhere to the applicable standard of care. And the district court fell into the same trap of analyzing this case just on the complaint facially and totally ignored the testimony from the experts, which you have to do because this is a factual attack on subject matter jurisdiction.
And I have a question to make sure I understand the record. As I understand, you had to make an administrative claim before you could sue. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor. And I'm pleased that the court mentioned that.
And the December 21, and I bring this up so the government can address it. In the administrative process, I have the administrative denial of your claim, as well as in the paperwork before that. There is no mention of him being ineligible or not entitled to benefits or anything. The decision by the VA on your claim is that you said the healthcare providers negligently failed to timely diagnose and negligently failed to treat the tongue cancer. And they concluded there was no negligent or wrongful act on the part. There's nothing in there at all that brought up the issue of benefits or approval of anything. It was all about whether there was, by the medical staff, doctors and nurses, failure to timely diagnose and failure to timely treat. So we get into scheduling, but scheduling is too granular. It's failure to treat.
Your Honor, you are exactly correct. And not only did we put the government on notice from the very beginning in the Form 95 that this was a medical negligence claim, and they treated it in their response as a medical negligence claim, we also asked the government to reconsider its position. And when the government sent its letter dated...
it's, Counselor, your time has expired.
May I conclude and answer the court's question, please?
You may.
Yes. Your Honor, when the government sent its response to our request for reconsideration, it stated that reconsideration was denied because it had had the case reviewed by a primary care physician, an oncologist, and an otolaryngologist, and that they did not find any issue with respect to the care and treatment rendered the veteran. They treated this as a medical negligence claim, and now they are trying to hide behind the Veterans Judicial Review Act and call it benefits. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Adams. Ms. Utrecht, you may proceed.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors. Jennifer Utrecht on behalf of the United States. At bottom, this is a very simple factual question in this case. Is the gravamen of the plaintiff's complaint and the discovery he produced about negligence by treating medical professionals, his treating physicians and treating nurses, or is it about delays that are the result of VA administrative staff who are responsible for making decisions about whether and when he is entitled to have treatment both in the VA and non-VA care paid for by the VA? The district court here found, based on its complete review of the complaint and the discovery in this case, the district court's order specifically notes that he's also looking at the facts that were produced in discovery, that the gravamen of the plaintiff's complaint is about the processing of benefits. It's about delay that happened when Nurse Ekwueme, who was an administrative professional, not a treating physician, but an administrative professional in what's called the fee department of the VA, who makes determinations about whether the VA is going to pay for outside care and when they can pay for outside care. Delays attributable to her decision-making process and the administrative process of scheduling and coordinating with this non-VA ENT and non-VA treatment. The district court on page 11 of the order mentions that the complaint itself talks about this authorization process more than a dozen times, but the plaintiff does not raise at any point any critique with the quality of care he received from his treating physicians. In fact, I believe in the stipulation. Yes, Your Honor.
What do you say in response to the fact that when you, as Judge Hall was noting, when you do look back at the benefits decisions, maybe not benefits decisions, but the administrative part of the complaint here, it never mentions delay. It's always talking about the quality of the services. It has three different medical professionals review the complaint. It appears that the VA itself viewed this as a malpractice claim as opposed to something in connection with benefits.
So
how do you respond to that?
Two responses, Your Honor. First, I'd like to be clear that the letter itself, I believe that Judge Hall was referring to, is a letter that is part of the administrative exhaustion process. So in order to bring an FTCA complaint,
yes, of course. But the point is, the whole reason that we exhaust complaints administratively is in case they can be taken care of by the agency, then we give the agency the first chance to address it.
Well, so yes, Your Honor. So, but I
if the agency, if the agency in addressing this complaint solely as a malpractice claim and not at all as a benefits claim, then why shouldn't we do the same?
Well, so Your Honor, the reason I provide that background is because, of course, if the agency is asked to look at this as an FTCA claim, it's going to look at it through an FTCA lens. And the only type of claim that can be brought under the FTCA would be something challenging his not his administrative professionals, his medical treating professionals' determinations. So of course, the agency, in reviewing something that has been presented to them as we'd like to bring an FTCA claim, is going to look for examples of medical negligence, his treating physician's negligence. And so that is what they were asked to analyze. They found no fault there. And in fact, the plaintiff has stipulated, there's in his deposition of Dr. Pupola, stipulated that they're not saying Dr. Pupola, his treating physician, or the treating physician's nurse were negligent in any way. And the second response, Your Honor, with respect to this letter is, I want to be very clear that when the district court made the determination here, it looked at not just the complaint, but also the jurisdictional discovery. And so on the face of the complaint, you might wonder, well, is the delay in fact caused by treating physicians? And that's what the agency did in this administrative exhaustion process. They looked at, well, was there an improper diagnosis? Was there negligence on behalf of the treating physician that caused this delay? And they found none. And it became clear in the course of jurisdictional discovery that the complaint wasn't about his treating physicians. It was about administrative professionals. And that is why the government has brought this motion to
Counsel, thank you. Let me ask you the same question that I asked your colleague. And that is, first of all, would you agree that at some point, if the VA, which has sole responsibility for scheduling these appointments, takes some ridiculous amount of time, let's just say, to make it clear again, 5 years, that the VA commits malpractice, would you agree with that?
So if the VA takes extensive delay in scheduling, then yes, it can be malpractice, but it's still malpractice that must be channeled through the VJRA.
Let me ask you something. If it's malpractice, why can it not then be handled under the Federal Tort Claims Act?
Because the VJRA is a broad devolution of jurisdiction. It very clearly says that any questions of law or fact related to the provision of benefit are left to the exclusive province of the secretary with review.
Again, in this case, how is it related to a benefit, especially since there's nobody here that's suggesting that he wasn't entitled to any of the treatment that he ultimately received. I mean, there's really not a question here of whether this was a benefit that he could receive. That's not an issue here.
Well, Your Honor, the reason why it's related to benefits is because the delay that he claims is delay of authorizing him to receive treatment paid for by the VA at non-VA hospitals. And as this court recognized in Milbauer and other courts of appeals have also recognized, a delay in treatment is no different. A delay in processing these kinds of claims is no different than a denial of these claims. And so it's not.
But you've already conceded that it is. When you agreed with me that at some point a delay becomes so long that it crosses into the realm of medical malpractice. But
Your Honor, the important caveat there is that it still needs to be channeled through the VJRA because it's related to the provision of benefits. And I would point, Your Honor, to Milbauer, in which that exact same theory was presented. The plaintiff there said that the delay in that case was.
Of course, Milbauer is not binding precedent on this.
It is not binding, Your Honor, but it's consistent with every other court of appeal to address the question. You know, the Ninth Circuit.
Let me tell you the problem I have with that. We all know, particularly from our prison cases, that sometimes delay in treatment is basically no treatment. And it's worse than no treatment, delay in treatment. And to say delay in treatment, I mean, I am surprised at your answer here, because you're basically saying even if it's a year's delay, I don't think it has to be five. I think this actual case shows delay in treatment. This is a very serious thing. You get that, and then you do what they did here. That is, in effect, no treatment for cancer, what they did here. And I don't know how, in not timely treating, you could say, well, that was just a delay in scheduling and blah, blah, blah. What it is, and he's got this in one paragraph of his complaint, 38D. I agree his complaint could have been a better phrase, but he's got failing to timely act in the face of the test results, the symptoms, and resulting in inexcusable delay in the diagnosis and the treatment. That's what this case is about. And that seems, but if you, that seems to be malpractice right there in the complaint.
I think there are two important things to say here. First, Your Honor is assuming that the delay is in fact caused by the VA, which is, of course, this is at a motion to dismiss. These are still factual disputes. And if this were to go to trial, the VA does have causation defenses as to what caused the delay.
Of course you do. I totally agree with that.
Second, Your Honor, your question seems to assume that there's no remedy available for a plaintiff in his situation, and that's simply not true. There is. Congress, through the VJRA, not only divested courts of jurisdiction, but also created the 1151 process, which is a process by which veterans who are injured by the VA healthcare, veterans, including failures to treat that may be caused by scheduling, like this one was, they can bring a claim for 1151 benefits. They are monthly benefits that are paid for to the veteran. The standards for causation are lesser under this. It's not as adversarial as the FTA system. It is designed to allow veterans who have claims like this to try and bring claims for relief, to try and get relief. But what's important is that it is the exclusive remedy. When Congress created this special remedy and created lower standards of proof, it made it the exclusive avenue for claims like this and divested district courts of jurisdiction under the FTCA. And at bottom, that's what this case is about. There is an avenue for plaintiff to try to seek relief, but it's not the FTCA.
He framed his complaint as a simple negligence claim rather than medical malpractice. In other words, the doctors didn't do anything wrong, but it was the administrators of the Veterans Administration who were negligent. They had a duty that was breached that caused my injuries, and I was damaged thereby. Couldn't he frame his complaint as a straight up negligence claim rather than a medical malpractice claim?
And that would be I believe that's a fair characterization of this complaint, but that would be a negligence complaint that the VA was negligent in administering the process for approving people for treatment and paying for that treatment. And because that analyzing that complaint would require a district court, as the district court below pointed out, would require the district court to ask how much of the delay was the result of this process versus a failure in medical judgment. Was the policy, the actual policy the VA had followed? What is that policy, and is it a reasonable one? These are all.
He might want to frame his complaint differently than how you're framing his complaint. That if we were to affirm, and I note that the district court dismissed the complaint without prejudice, if we were to affirm, would he have an opportunity to go back to the district court and recraft his complaint?
So it's possible, Your Honor, but I know that there would be a couple of difficulties he would have. The first is, of course, discovery has completed in this case, and he has not presented in discovery any clear allegation that his treating medical professionals or evidence that his treating medical professionals committed.
The complaint was dismissed. But there was discovery before the complaint was dismissed?
There was jurisdictional discovery in this case, and it was the facts that came out through discovery after discovery had completed that made the government realize that subject matter jurisdiction was lacking here, because at bottom, his complaints were in fact about administrative problems in the processing of benefits, and he did not identify any negligence on the part of his treating physicians.
I guess my concern is, could he craft a complaint in which he alleges that the Veterans Administration deviated from the standard of care that he was entitled to in the administration of his care there without alleging, without relying exclusively on the delay in providing treatment.
I'm sorry, Your Honor, could you repeat that once more?
Well, I'm wondering whether or not he could more carefully craft his complaint to allege that the Veterans Administration deviated from the standard of care that he was entitled to in treating his cancer.
So again, I hesitate to give a yes or no answer to that only because there has been discovery in this case, and the discovery which the district court reviewed in full was part of what led the district court to correctly recognize that this is not a complaint about his treating physicians, it's a complaint about the administrative process. If that had been different, if, you know, in a hypothetical situation that were different than this one.
Couldn't he allege negligence on the part of Veterans Administration employees without relying exclusively on malpractice by the doctors who treated him?
If the negligence is wrapped up in the benefits determinations in the question of whether and when he can be approved for non-VA care, then no, that's the sort of thing that has to go through the BJRA. And
what you're saying is, I'm gonna follow up on Judge Wilson to make sure we got it. So if it's outside consult and anything that's outside consult, no matter what it is, would be a benefits claim.
So what I'm saying is that if he is alleging negligence on behalf of his treating physician, so for example, this would be a different situation than what he's alleged and what the facts are here. If he said that his treating primary care physician said, I don't think this is serious and you don't have to rush on this.
We know what would be, I'm asking about this case. You right. Brought up the outside consults. So anything that's outside consults, approving going to outside consults or scheduling, basically you're saying anything that's scheduling related, no matter how long it's scheduled, it is going to be a benefits claim.
As this court held in Milbauer and as other courts have recognized, when we're talking about the VA's approval for...
Can I get an answer to my question?
And so yes,
we're talking about scheduling. How well, somebody Your Honor, says you need a PET scan. Please just listen. Yes. Somebody says you need a PET scan. Somebody says you need ABC. The VA is notorious for delay. And you're saying any of the scheduling things like that are going to be covered by the VJRA. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, Your Honor, because scheduling is inherently bound up in the benefits.
Yeah, that's what I'm just trying to say. So anything that's scheduling, delay in scheduling, surgery, inside or outside. Let's clarify that, whether it's inside the VA or outside the VA, it's going to be all part of the jurisdiction that the federal courts have no jurisdiction over.
So long as the delay is actually due to administrative professionals, I mean, if this were a case in which the scheduling was in fact the fault of a treating physician because the treating physician made an inappropriate diagnosis or said, don't worry about this, gave that poor guidance.
That's not about scheduling, that's about improper diagnosis. We have a correct diagnosis here. Let's assume there's a correct diagnosis.
I believe that's the appropriate line to draw, is if it's in fact about, you know, the treating physician's diagnoses or his guidance that he gives to the administrative physicians, that's the sort of thing that can be brought under the FTCA. But if it's about the administration's processing, you know, determining when someone can get treatment because that determines when they get paid. Importantly, the plaintiff has said-
It seems that's the heart of the matter here. Is medical care, just what the doctor diagnoses, is medical care the people, I mean, the doctor's not gonna schedule it, is medical care, provision of medical care, have a component that deals with timely treatment? I mean, where do you put the timely treatment part, the scheduling of it? Do you put it on the side, oh, that's just administrative, that's benefits? Or does it come within, in certain situations, part and parcel of the medical care. Can you really draw that line so that no matter what it is, no matter how long, it gets back to the earlier question, if it's scheduling, an administrative person has to do it, no doctor's scheduling, people, agents do it for him. You're saying all that's never covered, no matter how long it takes, whether it's inside the VA or outside, and that's not medical care.
That is the line that, you know, this court drew in Milbauer, that other courts have drawn, Ninth Circuit drew in the case.
Well, other courts have not drawn it. Other courts have said that's wrong, but I don't know the answer.
No, yet. Your Honor, I don't. I think Tunack in the Ninth Circuit very clearly said if we're talking about the VA's provision of treatment through scheduling, that's tied up in benefits and that has to go through the VJRA. But more importantly, Your Honor, I'd like to push back a little. I think this case is an easier one than the difficult line you're trying to draw, because we have had complete discovery in this case, because we have seen that at bottom, the plaintiff has, you know, through the depositions, asked people questions like, what was the VA's process? How long did they normally take in trying to make decisions about whether outside care was appropriate? Did they follow it here? You know, was there reasons why they breached that? And the answers to those questions are wrapped up in the sorts of questions that the district court held correctly, that this court held in Milbauer, are inherently wrapped up in questions of law and fact about the provision of benefit. The benefit specifically being whether and when a veteran is entitled to the VA to pay for his care. And that is the reason why this is the sort of thing that has to go through the VJRA, because if he wasn't asking for the VA to pay for his outside care, if he was paying for it out of pocket, we wouldn't have had these processing delays. And of course, that's why it's inherently inexorably entwined with benefits determinations that must go through the VJRA. And I see I'm over time. I'm happy to answer any further questions, but if there are none, we would ask that you affirm the district court.
All right. Thank you, counsel. And Mr. Adams, you have reserved some time for rebuttal. You're on mute, Mr. Adams.
Sorry. Your Honor, it's strange credibility to understand the government's position that when they responded to our claim for medical negligence, they did not anywhere in that response say, this is a benefits case. This case is governed by the Veterans Judicial Review Act. Mr. Smith, go file a claim for disability. Never said that at all. Now they take the position, and what the government is just simply doing here is trying to hide behind a process that they have set up that if this court follows will simply make it impossible for there ever to be a case for failure to timely treat or failure to timely diagnose, because the government will always say it's scheduling. This is not about scheduling. This is about authorizing care that Mr. Smith couldn't get unless it was authorized. That's the scheme the VA has set up. Is the government really arguing in this case about scheduling Mr. Smith's surgery? The government didn't have to schedule his surgery. His doctor scheduled his surgery, but the problem is he couldn't schedule it until the government authorized it. And they did not timely authorize it. They didn't authorize the surgery until May 13th, the day after they got a letter from a congressman fussing about not giving Mr. Smith the care he deserved as a veteran of this country. And here we are, this man was diagnosed with cancer in March, and we're talking about scheduling. The surgery was not authorized, and it had to be authorized in order for him to get it. This is not about a delay. This is not about benefits. This is a medical negligence case. If this same thing had happened at Emory University or any other medical center, that it would be a medical negligence case. And the VA has to, the VA is a hospital. It has an administrative side like every hospital in this country. We had a nurse that knew he was not getting surgery. We had a nurse that knew he needed a PET scan and a full workup and didn't do anything about it. We have a doctor that didn't do anything about it. But what happened? A congressman writes a letter and they do something about it. This is not about scheduling at all. And it's an attempt to get this court to fall into the trap of just looking at the plaintiff's complaint. And I will submit to you, We filed a medical affidavit with our complaint. And if you look at that affidavit, it states that the care Mr. Smith received was below the standard of care all across this country. Our expert gave testimony in his deposition, and he outlined the ways in which this treatment, a non-treatment, as Judge Hull stated, fell below the standard of care. This case is not about any benefits whatsoever. Medical, and even this, medical judgment is required in scheduling. If you want to call it a scheduling case, medical judgment is required in scheduling. And I would point to the court, what the court in Anestis stated. This is a case that we cited in our brief. In that case, the government argued, as the district court found here, that despite being labeled a tort claim, it involved a benefits determination since the challenges were made for failure to follow internal policies and involve medical benefits decision-making. The court in that case said this: if this court were to accept this expansive interpretation of benefits determination, a person could never sue the VA in the district court under any circumstances for failure to provide medical treatment. The result seems at odds with the statute that only requires that the secretary must decide all questions affecting provisions of benefits. To read the statute to preclude the district court jurisdiction of this claim would lead to extremely broad reading of what constitutes benefits determination. And that's where we are in this case. This is not about benefits. And the government says, well, he can go file a disability claim, but he can't get any compensation. He can't get anything at all for the pain and suffering that he's been through. He can't get anything for the lost chance of cure. He can't get anything at all other than a monthly stipend, which does nothing to compensate him for the pure hell that the government has put him through by not providing him the treatment that any other person in this country would have gotten. And he's a veteran and he deserves it because cancer can't wait. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, counsel. That concludes our arguments on this case.